Case number 21-1694, James Fox et al. Versus Heidi Washington. Oral argument is not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Manville, if you'd like to make some opening remarks.
All right, thank you. Your Honors, Professor Daniel Manville, Michigan State University College of Law, Director of the Civil Rights Clinic. In this case, we filed a motion to have a law student provide the argument, and I wanted to introduce her. This court granted that request, and I'd like to introduce the law student, Rhea Lassiter.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Ms. Lassiter. We're thrilled to have you here, and you're free to proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Your Honors, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Student attorney Bria Lassiter, representing appellants Fox and Perrott, hereafter Fox. This case was previously before this court at site 949 F3D270. This court found that two of the three prongs from RLUIPA were established. This case was remanded to have a second evidentiary hearing for the third RLUIPA prong. In this remand, the court said, the district court is directed to take additional evidence as necessary with the understanding that the department will face a heavy burden at this step. And because the government's asserted interest must be genuine and not hypothesized or invented post hoc in response to litigation, MDLC will be limited to raising justifications it cited at the time and made the decision to deny plaintiff's request for recognition of the Christian identity faith. I'm going to address three issues. One, Todd Betchler's testimony was in violation of this court's order on remand. Two, the security concerns, and three, the least restrictive means. First, regarding
Ms. Lassiter, you're free to spend your time arguing whatever issues you wish, but as the author of the first opinion, I think it would be more worthwhile if you concentrated on issues 3 and 4 of your brief, and those are whether the defendant satisfied the strict scrutiny standard that they were required to, whether they established that there is a compelling governmental interest in prison safety and security in not recognizing religion. And two, if so, whether they considered least restrictive means of furthering the governmental interest. I'm not particularly focused on the evidentiary questions or even the testimony of the expert. I don't think the case is going to rise and fall on whether you win issues 1 and 2 of your brief, but I think your appeal will win or lose depending on issues 3 and 4. So at least as one judge on the panel, I would prefer it if you'd please spend your time on the 3rd and 4th issue, which I think are the critical issues.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. Regarding the security concerns, this court has held that the RLUIPA analysis requires the government to demonstrate the compelling security interest is connected to the particular inmates who filed the lawsuit. In this case,
is that really true? Isn't it whether the recognition of their religion would further or the denial, whether the denial of the recognition of the religion would further a compelling governmental interest? Isn't that what we're looking at, is the religion rather than the plaintiffs?
We are looking at the religion. However, in Haight versus Thompson, you all held that that compelling security interest must be particularized to the inmates.
Well, it's got to be particularized to the prison setting. But if we ordered the defendant to recognize the Christian identity of religion in the Michigan prisons, it would not only apply to these two plaintiffs, it would apply to all prisons in the state of Michigan and all prisoners who wish to practice it. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so I see it. They had to sustain a burden of showing that the denial of recognition furthered a compelling state interest. And prison safety, I think you agree, is a compelling interest. But how does denying recognition of the religion further that interest? That's my question. And I get it's a better question for the other side, but tell me why you think they did not sustain their burden of showing that.
Your Honor, we believe that they did not sustain that burden because MDLC currently recognizes two other religions that do have a history of racial violence and separatist beliefs, both the Nation of Islam and the Black Hebrew Israelites. And specifically, the Nation of Islam has been recognized by MDLC for over 25 years. And the Nation of Islam is known for its theology of the separation of the races, disavowing interracial marriage.
And well, let me ask you, Counselor, is that in the record? My concern about treating this as if it is a comparator issue almost like Title VII is problematic in the context of the text of the test that applies here. My read on the Nation of Islam is that Perot, I'm not sure how he pronounces his name, testified. That's the only testimony about that as a comparator, with the exception of a brief bit of testimony by Mr. Belcher. So is the record adequate to make that determination based on a comparator like the Nation of Islam?
Your Honor, we also had some evidence through David Leach's deposition. David Leach was the special activities coordinator for MDLC, and he did testify as to the Nation of Islam and that there were some disturbances that have occurred from inmates who are part of Nation of Islam. And he even went as far as to say that he did attempt to try and get them labeled as a security threat group. So I do believe that the record was developed as to the Nation of Islam.
Well, if the record was wouldn't it help your case if the record was not adequately developed by the government? Isn't that their burden to place those issues into the trial? And if they failed to show how there was a support of this compelling interest regarding security, then it would be their failure, wouldn't it?
Yes, the burden does shift to MDLC to prove that they do have a compelling governmental interest and that they've used the least restrictive means in furthering that interest.
Ms. Lassiter, I have a question. I just want to make sure I'm understanding. Let's say you win and you get recognition, and let's say your clients are able to worship together, do you agree that they're not allowed to exclude people based either on their faith or race from participating in those worship services?
Yes, Your Honor. I do agree that they're not allowed to exclude
even though their religion seems to prefer one race worship.
Yes, even though their religion does seem to prefer that. However, both Fox and Peralt have testified that other inmates will be allowed to come to their worship sessions, and that they wouldn't be just forcing them not to come.
Second question. Again, let's just say for the sake of argument, you happen to win. You're recognized, and either during services or as a result of services, there's stuff that counts as hate speech or there's actual physical problems, you know, so either words that are threats or actual some form of violence. I take it you agree at that point, they've, you know, the prison is in a position to say we've satisfied strict scrutiny and therefore we're going to have to stop the worship services.
Yes. At that point, MDLC can, they even have, they can label the group as a security threat group, and then they wouldn't be able to meet in groups in the facility at all.
And that would apply to the whole group, even if only one person engaged in the violence or hate speech or threats?
They can label the group a security threat group, and, or individuals can be labeled as security threats. So those two different options.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's your general reaction to this problem that, you know, it's not easy to run a prison. And one serious problem in prisons when it comes to violence is violence that relates to the common word would be gangs. But the point is, it can be affinity groups, I guess would be a kinder way to put it. But quite often they can be Aryan Nation. I mean, they're really, it's very problematic. And so why shouldn't we be giving some deference to these prison administrators who really, let's face it, have a very difficult job? And, you know, violence is bad enough in prison, but race-based violence, you know, doubles and triples the negativity of it. Why shouldn't we be giving them some deference in this?
Your Honor, because the plaintiffs, Fox and Peralt, they've testified that while the Christian identity faith does advocate for separation of races in terms of marriage and worship, it's not a violent faith. They introduced evidence at trial of the writings of the Christian identity faith, and they reject violence, and neither of these inmates have a history of violence in MDLC. And additionally, they've gone as far to testify that if a member of the Christian identity faith during a worship session were to attempt to cause a disruption during their session, that they wouldn't be accepted as a member of their faith.
Well, if this is true, why don't more prisons recognize them? I mean, does the record reflect whether the Federal Bureau of Prisons, for example, do they recognize Christian identity and permit worship services?
The record does not reflect that, Your Honor.
Does the record tell us about any other state prisons?
No, Your Honor.
Does it say either way? Does it say that they were denied recognition? It's just silent on it. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Well, whose burden is it at this point? Is it your burden or their burden? It's theirs, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
She's smiling because she wants harder questions, Judge Griffin.
Okay.
He was prepared for hard questions, not easy ones.
Well, in regard to the services, it's my understanding that the non-Caucasian would be allowed to attend services, but they would not be able to become members of the church. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, because they are allowed to attend services. I see that I'm out of time. May I finish my response?
Yes.
Okay. They are allowed to attend services, but they wouldn't be members of the Christian identity faith.
Sure. I mean, you know, Protestants can go to a Catholic mass, but they can't take communion until they become a member or are members. I mean, there's a lot of analogies like non-members attending services. Anyway, I want to thank you for your service to the plaintiffs. And
all right. Well, we'll hear from Mr. Dean then. You'll get your full rebuttal, Ms. Lassiter. All right, Mr. Dean.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and thank you for your time. We're now in front of this court for the second time on the issue of whether or not the Michigan Department of Corrections should be compelled to formally recognize a religion who specifically requires racially segregated services. And I'd like, if I might, to be able to address that last issue, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
The process for prisoners when they designate a religion, it's actually a declaration that they make to the MDOC. Hey, I want to check the box that I'm a Christian identity member. And the MDOC at that point cannot in any way restrict that membership by them based on the fact that of race or any other category. And in fact, that would be a violation of equal protection. So the potential problem that we've got here in formal recognition, because the MDOC does not deny either plaintiff or any member to identify as a Christian identity member, they just don't formally recognize their ability to have group worship services. And under the
strict- I think we're all on the same page. They've agreed that to the extent there are any tenets of their faith that could be described as prohibiting worship by others, that they will not insist on complying with those. And while I don't think this is happens to be a faith that promotes violence, everyone agrees you can't violate those independent prison rules. And if you do, you're going to run into trouble. So how have you satisfied strict scrutiny under those circumstances? I mean, they're the ones that are allowed to say we're willing to worship under these circumstances. I assume that's a welcome concession from your perspective. So tell me why you satisfied your strict scrutiny burden.
Sure. The strict scrutiny burden that the MDOC had to satisfy is not a general justification for it under safety and security, but a specific compelling interest. And in this case, it's the Christian identity's insistence that they have racially segregated services. Now, counsel tried to point out the fact that Nation of Islam is a racially segregated religion, but Todd Beckler testified during the evidentiary hearing that the Nation of Islam does not have a requirement restricting members of other races to be at their services.
And hey, where do you come up, counsel? Where do you come up with this? I just asked plaintiff's counsel whether non-members could attend services, and they said yes. You say that that's wrong. Where in the record
I do say that's wrong because both plaintiffs testified that they would strongly counsel people that they do not belong here.
Tell me where they said that. I've read.
I think you're pushing the envelope on the evidence.
Yeah, I thank you very much. So they said they would. They would
warn them.
Warn them, but they would let them attend services, and you say that they would be prohibited from attending services.
Your Honor,
I don't think that's an accurate representation of the record.
But the problem with that thought is basing the reaction of the entire Christian identity faith on two plaintiffs who have a vested interest in portraying their religion in a positive light when the historical record does not.
What do you have to the contrary? I mean, we set this back for two evidentiary hearings.
Yes.
And if you have something that's contrary to what the plaintiffs testified to, I think you had to contradict it.
Well,
right?
I think you have to look at Todd Beckler's testimony in recent Christian identity, and that they are a violent organization and a racist.
Okay, you're switching issues here. We're talking about services, allowing non-members to attend services. And I'm still asking you, where in the record can I see that is what the religion requires, or that's what would be required here?
Well, if we said
that they should have been recognized.
Well, what I would say is that their own testimony throughout the trial and their evidentiary hearing is that they believe in separation of the races, Your Honor.
Okay, you're not answering my question, Mr. Dean. I don't know if you can't hear me or what.
Mr. Dean, let me try to look at this question in slightly a different way, but I want to try to get to the same point I think Judge Griffin's trying to get you to answer. And I'm going to hypothesize a faith that I don't think exists, but historically there have been faiths along these lines. So you have an ancient faith that has 100 tenets, all right? 99 of them are quite similar to other faith groups. There's nothing unusual. There's nothing violent, threatening, racist, or anything. But tenet number 100 says we have, you know, child sacrifice once every seven years. Now, I'm assuming that the way RFRA works is, yes, you would be allowed to say you can't enforce tenant 100 in our prisons. But if the believers came forward and said, we appreciate the point, all we want to do is respect the other 99, which do not create these problems, do not violate prison rules. In the abstract, I assume you agree that's okay, right? They can say, we realize we can't practice that last tenant, and then you've got to accept it, right? Are we in agreement about that point?
I think so, Your Honor. Yes.
Okay, so that just leads to what I think Judge Griffin is trying to say, which is, why aren't you willing to accept the concessions of the two plaintiffs that they are going to allow interrace, interfaith worship? And, you know, you're allowed to say evidence develops after that that shows violence occurred, people were excluded. Voila, you have the evidence you need to satisfy strict scrutiny. But I guess I'm puzzled why that's so troubling for the prison.
Well, two things I would say. Number one, that the two plaintiffs don't speak for the entire religion and the historical impact of that religion in this country. But secondly, and more importantly, that position forces the MDOC to close the barn door after the horses have already gotten out. In other words, they have to, under this theory, allow them to congregate. And if they then engage in violence and keeping other prisoners out, which is unique in the MDOC, there are no other religions.
But here's the part I don't understand about your barn doors. Don't open the door. All right. They don't get into worship without an agreement that all comers are permitted. There's no exclusion based on race. There's no exclusion based on faith or any other impermissible ground. Violence is not permitted. Don't come if that is something you think is contemplated here. No, there's no door opening. You make that clear at the outset.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree that in the prison setting, that rule setting like that, saying, hey, don't engage in bad behaviors, does not stop the prison population from engaging in violent and criminal behavior. The MDOC has an obligation, number one, to protect all the constitutional rights by, and in this case, would be forced to allow prisoners to join that religion who may have no other purpose to join that religion than to foment disruption within the system, meaning people who are not white prisoners would specifically join up in order to show up on Sunday services and cause a confrontation. And that's what the MDOC is saying. Is that,
I mean, I think you probably have a panel of judges that accepts your concern that these things could happen. But what I don't understand, and now I'm speaking only for myself, is why you can't find the evidence. I mean, this is a big country. There are federal prisons, there are state prisons. If you think it's so obvious this is a violence fomenting group, or an exclusionary group, show us the evidence when they had I know some states do permit them to worship. Show us the evidence where it broke down, and then you've got what you need.
I'm not personally aware of any states that have allowed the Christian Identity to have group worship service.
Are you aware of any that have rejected it in the record?
Only cases in which they talked about periodicals coming in from the outside of the Christian Identity faith that they rejected, and those, and I understand that that's under a Turner standard and not a strict scrutiny, but there have been cases that have not allowed religious publications from Christian Identity to enter the prison because of the violent and the racial segregation line.
Let me ask you about
apples to oranges.
Let me ask you about the test. Let's assume that some of us agree with you that this is a compelling government interest and that you've met that standard. What strikes me as problematic here is the prong of the less restrictive alternatives, the less restrictive means. And, you know, I'm looking at your rules, your rules that you in the policy must and are authorized to enforce. The in-room staff supervision, for example, the security threat group designation, either for individuals or the group itself. And then based on your own rules, the question of designations of religion. Let's assume that you've got a troublemaker. Well, that troublemaker can't come to that group, assuming that they've got five people to even meet in order to qualify for group services. But let's assume they do. Then the only people who can come are the people who have selected that as their one religion, and they can't switch back and forth except for twice a year. So why is the problem in this case not the least restrictive alternative?
Because the proposed least restrictive alternative that the plaintiffs have suggested is that they give them a trial run, which leads back to my argument that that is allowing the problem of violence.
No, why would these plaintiffs be authorized to specify the rules? If the issue is, do you have a compelling interest? And we move on to the least restrictive prong, then it's MDOC that sets those rules. MDOC says, here is the policy that every religion operating in our corrections facilities have to comply with. And that's you too. The adherents of this faith do not get to define your rules, even if they are an authorized religion. They must fit within the rules. My concern is I don't see that discussion or the building of that defense in the record, that you would be able to impose restrictions that would be protective of what is a very real and concerning interest in safety for the prisoners and the guards and the facility.
Well, my answer to that, Your Honor, would be that in some of the questions towards the end, towards the two plaintiffs in the evidentiary hearing, they were asked, what would you do? And I asked Mr. Perrault specifically, isn't that kind of a soft coercion? That if the MDOC can't tell a prisoner that he can't show up for your Sunday services because he's not white enough, you now are the Christian Identity group now becomes the enforcer of who gets to show up for their group services. And they do.
I understood that they had to go by your rules, which is services cannot be refused to anyone who designates themselves in that faith. So I understood the testimony was, well, if they wanted to come, we would warn them. And if one of our members, one of our adherents to the faith, was acting inappropriately toward them based on their race, we would expel from that service our own member. Isn't that the testimony of record?
I don't get that at all. What I did get from Mr. Perrault was a kind of no true Scotsman argument that, hey, no true adherent to the Christian Identity faith would do that. And yet the historical record shows that the Christian Identity faith has been extremely and virulently racist.
So I am incorrect that there was no statement by these plaintiffs that if one of their adherents sought to exclude someone based on race, that they would put that person out from that service.
The comment I found was on page ID 2070, where he stated, anybody that is truly an identity Christian would not commit an act of any type of violence because we're commanded not to. That doesn't in and of itself show anything. It shows one particular member who has a vested interest in portraying the religion as non-racist and non-violent, but in fact has a history of that. And the specific
personal history or religious history?
Religious history. And the difference
between is that in the record? Did you place that into the
record? That was in the original trial testimony, yes. And the motion for summary judgment had the documents that David Leach looked at, trying to think of the summary judgment motion that discussed that, that led to the trial.
Can I ask a related question? What if you do, you reckon you permit the Nation of Islam and aren't we, don't we have the same, I mean, this was the point raised by your friend on the other side at the outset. They're both separatists on race grounds. I should have thought it was on your burden to explain, per Judge Stranch's question, if you've found least restrictive means for the one, why not for the other?
And Todd Beckler did testify to that, Your Honor. He testified that there, that the this document 219, page ID 2044, he did not, the Nation of Islam does not exclude non-Blacks as part of their tenets. That's always been the major distinction here with Christian identity, is that they are so centrally identified with this notion that no one can attend our services.
Are they separatists? Are they separatists when it comes to marriage?
I don't know that deeply into there, but in the prison setting, a marriage is not really an issue that prison officials have to be concerned with, because it's not something that, you know, prisoners aren't marrying each other within the
end. So in one, there's no separatism when it comes to services. In the other, there may be ways to read the religious documents that suggest you can only participate together. But the two people in this case have said we're not going to enforce that. So it seems to me you're back to the Nation of Islam problem.
I respectfully disagree with that, Honor, only in the standpoint that, as plaintiffs pointed out, Nation of Islam has existed for the last 20, 25 years within the MDOC, and they have not had those problems. And I attribute that, or the MDOC attributes that, to the fact that they don't have as a central tenet, nobody of the race of African American can attend our religious services. And that's the specific concern here with the Christian identity, because they focus so heavily on
one quick question, Judge Griffin, is the same analysis true of the Moorish Science Temple?
I don't think the record was really developed that heavily on the Moorish Science Temple, and I don't feel comfortable testifying on it. I just don't think.
Thank you, Judge Griffin.
All right, Mr. Dean, you're raising a new justification for denying recognition of the religion. You're arguing today that they would not allow non-whites to attend services. I think our prior opinion says, this is page 16 of the opinion, that on remand, the DOC is limited to raising the justifications it cited at the time it made the decision to deny plaintiff's request for recognition of Christian identity. One, that the religious beliefs and practices of Christian identity can be adequately met by an existing recognized religious group. And two, that it would threaten the custody and security of all correctional facilities. Now, those are the only two issues that were not addressed in the prior opinion, are they not? And isn't what you're trying to raise today really beyond the scope of the remand?
No, Your Honor. The issue
did I misread the opinion that I wrote?
Well, the second issue that you discussed is what we've been discussing, is
threaten the custody and security.
Exactly. Okay. And that can take the form of many different things. And that's the specific concern there.
Okay, so it's not that they discriminate against non-white people. That's kind of what you're arguing today, is kind of a discrimination theory. But you're saying that kind of goes into the safety concerns, right? That's the only way we look at it. But it's not independent. There's not an independent claim of discrimination based upon race.
No, it's not the
discrimination. Okay, security. But you also recognize district court said that the religion itself is nonviolent, right? The district court actually, I think, ruled that, did they not?
I do not agree with that, but I'm willing to be convinced otherwise, but I don't recall the district court saying that the Christian identity is not dangerous. They were talking about the threat specifically of the racist ideology. And I believe in the opinion itself, discussed.
Well, let's maybe we can ask Ms. Lassiter.
Sure. All that. Right.
Okay.
Very well.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. Ms. Lassiter, you're free to pick up, but if you want to answer this last question, if you happen to know whether the district court had anything to say on these points, that would be great.
Can you repeat the question, just to make sure I understand it correctly?
Well, Ms. Lassiter, page 5 of the district court opinion, did the district court say, and I quote, the CI faith does not promote hatred of the races, nor does it condone violence. Is that accurate statement of the opinion of the district court?
Yes,
Your okay. Honor. Does that answer my question, I think?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Yes, so is there anything else, Ms. Lassiter, you'd like to tell us?
I just would like to take a moment to note that the historical record that was referenced only refers to events or incidents that occur outside of the prison system. Nothing in any record is within that has been in evidence comes from a violence that occurred by the Christian Identity faith within the prison system.
And does that have to do with the fact that they have not been admitted as a group, as an accepted religion, to participate in group services at a jail?
Your Honor, that could be a reason, but there are people like plaintiffs Fox and Peralt who do identify as Christian identity members, and there's nothing in the record where they have done anything violent or racist within MDLC specifically. So they could have found evidence of other people who identify as Christian identity members who have also not, and there's no evidence where they have committed any violent acts within MDLC. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay. Well, thanks to both of you for doing this virtually. I'm glad that worked out. Mr. Dean, it's really helpful to have someone with some experience as you have and knowledge about the area and this case in particular. So we're really grateful for your advocacy. And Ms. Lassiter, we're not only grateful for your advocacy, but excited about the prospect of your becoming a lawyer and arguing in front of us more often. I thought you were terrific. The best advice is always to try to answer the questions, and you never got off of that, and you were respectful. And anyway, you've got a really promising career ahead of you. I suspect this was a difficult case for both of you, and it's not an easy case for us, frankly. So we're going to do our best with it, but feel good about the fact that we've got great lawyers here to help us get to the right place. So thank you very much for your wonderful briefs and excellent oral advocacy. And congratulations, Ms. Lassiter, in particular.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
This honorable court is now adjourned. Counsel, you can both disconnect at this time. And Marshall, if you could confirm that disconnection when it occurs, please.